Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 699. Not just visiting. We've got some jokes for you. We've got some things for your classroom. We got a great article by David Podolsky this week. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right, welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-host show host, Mr. Sean McGurr. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I'm well. Looking forward to a little bit of a vacation coming up here. So,
yeah.
I went to a friend, went to a movie with a friend the other night.
You did?
Yeah, I was robbed.
You were?
Yeah, over $1,000.
That's a lot.
It is. The thieves got a large bag of popcorn, two large drinks, and a peck of Skittles.
Oh. you've been going to
Have you been to a movie theater lately?
Yeah. Actually, AMC over at Fairlane closed.
I did actually go see Hoppers.
Did you? How was it?
It was good. It's a latest Pixar movie about the environment and closing down a natural area to make a highway. It's good. Very good. I'd recommend it. Imagine if you walked into a room and there was a long line of people waiting to take a swing at you.
Oh, we call that second hour.
Yeah, that's the punchline.
Yeah, oh, got you, yes.
I bet you don't know this, but my grandfather invented the cold air balloon.
You know what? I'm going to be betting with you because I don't know this.
Yeah, it never really got off the ground.
I got you. Yeah. Designed for the Arctic, maybe.
You know, light travels faster than sound.
It does.
That's why some people appear bright until you hear them speak.
I got you.
I picked up a new pair of gloves. Unfortunately, they're both lefts.
Really?
Yeah. Which, on one hand, is great. But on the other, just not right.
I got you. Yep. Yep.
Here's a math joke for you.
Uh-oh.
You ready?
You might have to explain it to me.
Okay. I was 16 minutes late for the first math lecture, 8 minutes late for the second one, and 4 minutes late for the third one. At this rate, I'll never be on time.
I got you.
I got to send that one off to one of my math friends.
It's like parking at Eastern.
Like parking at Eastern?
Yeah. Yeah, when you first get there, you're about 16 minutes late because you don't know where to park. And as you get to the end of your grad program, then it's down to 4 minutes late because now you know a pretty good idea where to park. But,
yeah. Oh, a friend of mine has a bank account purely for buying raisins.
Really?
Yeah, it's a current account.
Oh, those kind.
Yeah.
I like it.
How about this one? What's the difference between a literalist and a kleptomaniac?
Ooh. I don't know.
A literalist takes things literally. A kleptomaniac takes things literally.
Ah.
This is one of those grammar jokes.
Somebody stole the comma in the first part. Yeah.
Yep. I also have for you a visual joke on palindromedary over at middleschoolmatters.com.
Got it.
I don't remember if I sent this one to you or not.
Because
as soon as I saw this one, I was like, I think Sean would like this one and chuckle, but I think I saved it for the show. All right, the other thing that we saved for the show is the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski. Oh, and yeah. This week, I don't know if you've heard or not, but there's this thing, Artemis, that's in the news. They returned safely.
I teach ancient Greek history, so yeah.
Well, this is way out there.
Oh, well, mine's a lot closer.
And this is way out there. It's around the Earth. And so Dave's got an interesting perspective on Artemis and the whole space thing. So here, without further ado, is the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski and the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the April 2, 2026 edition of the National Science Teaching Association blog, and I read an article that was entitled A New Dawn on the Lunar Horizon, written by Christine Ann Royce. And she wrote that for over five decades, the moon has been a silent monument to what we once did. We've seen the grainy, flickering footage of the Apollo era, a black and white memory of a generation that proved the impossible was possible. But for today's students, the Artemis generation, the moon is no longer a museum. It is a destination. On April 1st, 2026, the Space Launch System engines ignited, liftoff occurred, and Artemis II headed to the moon. It carried more than just the Orion capsule. It carried the first four humans to venture into the deep space proving ground in a half century. When mission commander Reid Wiseman, pilot Victor Glover, and mission specialist Christina Koch and Jeremy Hansen peered through the hatch window around day six, nearly 6,000 miles beyond the moon's far side, they witnessed a sight no human had seen since 1972. Earth rising above a stark, centered horizon, a fragile blue marble suspended in the vast velvet darkness of space. Artemis II isn't just a return to the moon. This mission is our bridge to future space exploration. It is the moment we test the limits of our life support, the strength of our heat shields, and the grit of our spirit. We aren't just visiting, we are practicing to stay. We are learning how to live on another world so that one day we can walk on Mars. Artemis II is the heartbeat of a new era. It's the story of a global community coming together to solve the hardest problems imaginable, proving that when we look up at the moon, we aren't just looking at a rock in the sky, we're looking at our next front porch. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
I like how he talks about how we're not just visiting the moon. What could be our next front porch?
According to the reports this week, at some point we're going to get on a 6-month rotation and start doing some building. This is a great week for Dave's podcast, because there's all so many wonderful things that came out of the Artemis mission for him to mine and to share with us in the future weeks. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yep. So, last week I went to a conference as well.
Yay!
It's been a while since I've been to a conference, because the last conference I was going to go to ended up with a hospital stay instead. So, you know,
that's true.
That was a thing. And so I took conference notes using Notability, mm-hmm. which we've talked about on and off for a while. And I paid for Notability a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
Like probably getting close to a few decades ago at this point, but
I think it's back when they first came out. We both
when
got
it first came out. Yeah. It's one of those things that I got the free version. It's like, oh, I really like this and I want to support them. So I bought it. I think I paid like $5 for it or something. I don't remember. But it wasn't tons of money. And they would really like more money for me because it's like, you know, we have a special deal for you. And I'm like, well, the things that I wanted it for actually work. And I don't use it tons. I use it when I go to conferences and I use it if I'm sketching something out that I'm going to build. So, not very often. And they move things around. So,
yes.
It did.
Yes, they did.
It was like, where's the button? And so, I had to find the button. But I think I was the only one taking notes on an iPad at the conference. And I still, every time I do this, I'm wondering because, you know, that there's the whole research about if you handwrite things on paper, you remember it better than if you type it, right? And I have asked Liz Kolb a couple of times if that extended to, if there's any research showing that extended to writing it on a tablet, writing it digitally as well. And she said, I don't know. I haven't seen any research on that. And I still haven't seen any research on it, but I just wonder if it is, if it does make a difference. But I do, I handwrite things out. And then usually what I do is I snap a couple of pictures that, in case I'm like, if I'm falling behind or if there's something that I want to grab that's like just, I want to quote just this or something about the image or something, then I'll snap a picture. And that was part of what I had to find is where did they put the picture part? So I have my handwritten notes and diagrams from A.G. Giuliani, who was the keynote speaker. And the conference was set up in kind of an interesting way because once the conference started, he did a keynote and then he did a session. And then we had lunch. And then there were two breakout sessions. So everybody.
Sorry about that.
Sean, there's a microphone right in front of you.
Apparently, it's next to my ear, which is where my headphones are. Whack.
Which I can't give you too much of a hassle about, given that I spilled coffee earlier because I bumped into my coffee cup. But
I wasn't.
But that's the way the conference was scheduled. It was a much smaller conference than some of the ones that I go to, which was nice. And he's a very good speaker. He knows the speaker game. He did a nice job. He rarely had tons of words on the screen.
Oh,
which
nice.
He actually followed good presentation standards. The times that he did, they were like, you know, quotes or something, and he talked about it robustly. But he was talking about, you will be shocked to hear this, Sean, absolutely shocked, I tell you. But he was talking about AI and how AI is impacting education.
Ah.
So, and interesting. He's also very personable. He grounds everything in like his experience. He was a middle school principal at one time as well. So he he got plus cred for that.
Yes.
Yeah. So he also has he has children at every educational level right now.
That's amazing.
He's got five kids from preschool to high school. So he's like, yeah, I got experience with all of it, and different kids and different personalities, which we all know kind of happens. But so it was interesting. And, you know, this is kind of the big thing in education, and everybody's talking about it. One of the things he said that I really that kind of struck me is AI is not the biggest change in education. Distraction is.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was one of those things that was very interesting. It's like, because that's a lot of what we've been talking about. I got it slightly wrong. It's AI is not our biggest challenge. Distraction is. And he had a whole bit about continuous partial attention. And he did it. His presentation had some interactivity in it, which I thought was really good, which was well done because it wasn't like too much. And there was a point to the interactive participation. So, and he did an example of continuous partial attention. And, yeah, it was fun. It's fun to fail because you're trying to attend to too many things. So, and I think that's really partly why we're getting this whole parents are pushing for no screen time at all, and it's interesting. I just think that it's something we need to talk about and something we need to address and something we need to figure out, because a lot of this stuff is just not going away. So, he had some things about expectations, and about what kids expect their life to be like. One of the other things I thought was interesting is he talked about how outliers are considered normal. And I think this has partly always been the case, because he talked about like some of the YouTube influencers who are making gazillions of dollars, right? Like there's people that are making tons of money putting on makeup every morning. And he says, and my daughter has made $0 from it so far. In fact, given our trips to Sephora and Ulta, we're in the red. So, but I think back to, you know, how many kids, you know, growing up were going to be the next Michael Jordan, how many were going to be the next big football star.
Right.
And so I don't think that's necessarily new. It's just a little different twist on it. It was one of the questions that I think is good for teachers to ask and talk about with kids is, what do kids today expect from the future? What do they expect their future to be? And I think this is a lot of listening opportunity, like figuring out what is it that kids really, really want. And just taking the perspective of kids, and especially it's like, okay, if AI is available to you, would you use it? And then he's got a whole green, he's got a stoplight structure.
Right. I've seen that one. I like it.
Yeah, which is like, nope, can't use it at all for this. Or, yeah, let's talk about it. And it was one thing he was pretty consistent with, is that you need to talk to kids about what is their plan, why would they use it, what are they hoping to get out of it. And he gave us a couple of scenarios, and we had to think through the scenarios. It was like, is this okay to use? Is this, under these conditions, would it be okay to use? And then one of them was like, okay, kid is going to use it. They're stuck. They're supposed to write something, but they're stuck. And they want to use AI to develop a couple of examples. And they do that. And then they're going to use that to write their own original story. Is that okay? And there's lots of people like, no, that's cheating. And then he said, okay, let's replace AI with, they're going to talk to their parent, and their parent gives them a couple of stories. Is that cheating? And then you see people twisting their face like, oh, wait a minute. And one of the other things that he said, that, and this didn't come from him, it came from a teacher who works in a lower SES area. And she said, AI is, for many kids, is like having two parents. Because a lot of her kids don't have two parents. Stressing the two well-off parents. Like, if you have two well-off parents, they have time for you. They follow up with you. They give you ideas. They're there to support you and all of that. And he said he's really processing that still. And it's just a different way to look at it. So it was interesting. He had us work through a couple of things using AI, and that didn't go as well because we didn't have enough time for AI to process, or you had to create an account. There was too much time taken up. But he did provide us with some tools. And so I'm going to link to that, and we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. But I'll give you those tools as well. And then he also talked about how he was modeling this behavior. It wasn't just, here you go. It was within the structure of what he was doing. So it wasn't like, okay, and then you use AI. It was way more of, here's what we're doing. Here's why we're doing it. Here's some resources you could use. Here's why you're using them and what you would need to accomplish using them. So it was good. I thought he did a really nice job. So, whoops. The whoops is not for anybody but me. So it was interesting. And talk a little bit more about some of the breakout sessions and that in the future. But I have to say, I'm really trying to figure out how this is really, really going to play out, because I've seen so many movements that we're going to change everything and totally remake education, and they've had an impact, but not the kind of impact that people were talking about. And I don't know if AI is going to be that same thing or not. So I know it's changed things for you because it's impacted your workflow quite a bit.
Oh, The technology has been I hate paper. I absolutely hate paper. And it's been good for that. Plus mm-hmm. the gamification side, it becomes easier to do it with more diverse populations, because some of the kids need 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 times to run a game to get the hang of it. And mm-hmm. with technology, they can run it as much as they want until they get it.
I was speaking specifically of AI, though, because I know you've used
AI.
Technology yeah, very good. Differently, but AI has kind of changed your workload, your workflow pretty recently.
Yeah, I've been working on the fifth grade social studies curriculum. I'm glutton for punishment. My principal said, hey, what do you know about this? And I said, well, we've got something in folders. You want me to pull it together? He's like, yes, because they're desperate and they need something. And it directly affects how much they know coming into my class. So I'm thinking this is a benefit mm-hmm. for me, which is why I did it. There's no pay in it. Absolutely no pay. And so I went to an open source textbook and I started pulling things and using AI, I would say, this is what I want to do. And then the brainstorming piece has been so nice, because I'll say, this is what I want to do, but I'm not quite sure like where I want to go with it. Give me like 5 ideas. And then I look at the 5 ideas and I go, all right, what would Rick say? Rick Wormley, which ones really appeal to things like Rick's work? And it'll say, well, how about this? I'll just take those 5 and I'll Rickify it. Oh, hey there, you know, that's even better. But I still have to make a choice between 5. No, I don't. I'll do 3 of the 5 and I'll make the teacher make a choice based on what their students are like that they have that particular year. So, yeah, no, AI has been a wonderful tool. But I think, and this is the conversation that I've been having with some folks at school, is especially with, folks at school, there's a student named Adrian, and he wants to accuse me of everything that I do is generated by AI. And why should he do it? Because I must have used AI to make it. It's like, no, this one's all me, buddy. So actually, it's probably not as good as what you probably should get. But because I can ask AI to go through and find me the issues in, where's the holes, where's the weaknesses in the pedagogy? And they'll come back and they'll say, you've got 11 weaknesses you really need to address. It's like, mm-hmm. dude, this is humbling. And it'll come back and tell me, and I'll say, well, yeah, we need to do that. And it'll come back with some stuff. And it's like, no, that has nothing to do with this project. So leave that out. Just don't even go there. And it'll be like, okay, sure, whatever. That's the other nice thing, too, is I'm not offending its feelings by saying, no, no, this is not. No, leave that thread alone. We're not touching that wire. But in the hands of like a kid named Adrian, I'm making up a name here. But a kid like him who is just, I just want to hurry and get it done. I don't care what it looks like, and I don't care if it's quality or not. I've ticked the box. You can't do that. You can't do it as a teacher either, but we have the benefit of age and years and time and wisdom to stop and go, like this fifth grade curriculum. I'll go back to that because I started there. I've written stuff like this before, and it's taken me 9, 10, 11 weeks to put together a semester. And I've got this done in almost 2 weeks worth of time, and not even full time, just like working on it in the evenings. Mm-hmm. And I'm generating things that I'm looking at going, man, I wish I was teaching this. so I'm hoping it's good stuff. I've got just a little more to go. And then I'll have I'm putting everything I make, I put in a Google Drive folder, and then I'm printing a hard copy, and then I'm creating the activities inside Moodle. So I'll be able to take the binder, hand it to my boss, who then will hand it to his wife, who's the boss over at the fifth grade building. And she can do the paper thing and look at all the paper. Like, I've got the open source textbook printed in there, and so she can see that part. And then she can see the ancillary activities and all the stuff, the other stuff that I've made for it. But then the stuff is all online, so the teachers can just go in, and if they want to change it, they can go in and change it, because it's in a Google mm-hmm. Doc. Mm-hmm. But the best part is that I go in and I do the design part. It does the build part, and then I do the, it's like building a building, The AI does the rough work, and I go in and I do the finishing. And I think that's probably the best. That's my workflow that's worked best for me. I don't trust. AI Magic School is great for what it does, and does a lot of wonderful things. But it's making a lot of curricular assumptions that I'm not involved in. Granted, I know I'm weird. There's a lot of teachers out there that don't want to make those curricular decisions. But I do, because I want my stuff to be middle-level pedagogy, and I want to be it for my mid-level kids. And there's specific pedagogy that I want, that I know is good. I'm a control freak. I want some control over it. But I do like what you were saying about the distracting. The biggest change is distractions. That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, one of the other things that he said, and I made sure I wrote this down, we have to assess the learning process, not the final product. And his point was that, especially with AI, you have no idea where the final product came from. And so you have to assess the learning product. You have to assess the learning process. And he talked about presentations and Socratic circles and Socratic methods and having students defend the learning instead of just turning in a final product. So I thought that was interesting as well. And then there's lots of links. I also think that he hasn't met an AI that he doesn't like. Because he's on the speaker circuit, and some of these companies end up supporting the speaker circuit. So you want to be nice to the people that have the money. So, which is one more reason I'll never be on the speaker circuit. But hey, and there was some interesting perspectives, some things I need to sit with and process for a bit to go through. And of course, there's some things that we were encouraged to share on the social web.
There's actually a few things that I thought were interesting from Eric Kurtz primarily. So we're going to spend a lot of time with Eric Kurtz this week in the social web. EdTech links for the week April 6th at Control Alt Achieve. There's some Notebook LM webinars he's going to do. There's a graphic novels webinar he's going to do. Actually, I've started that one. It's a recorded webinar. Using Notebook LM and using some other tools to create a graphic novel. I don't have all the details because I'm working my way through that one as I have time. He's got some links to some AI games and activities webinar. And actually, there's a webinar is coming up. Where is it? April 21st at 3 p.m. So you can sign up for that. That's something that's forward-focused. And he's got some other things that are coming up, too, with that. But he also posted about some new gems this week. And there's some I think are really good for middle-level teachers that I want to just highlight three of them. First one is a gallery walk activity. So you can design engaging interactive gallery walk activities where students move around the classroom to explore bite-sized texts, images, and primary sources. That's like right up the alley of what I'm doing with this fifth grade curriculum. So I'm going to probably sneak over there and try that one specifically with that curriculum to see what I can produce. Another one I thought was interesting is a reading level analyzer. You put in the text and it'll tell you the reading level, and then it'll say, so where do you want it to be? And you can then re-level the text for whatever your needs might be. And then there's a project-based learning generator. design project-based learning units at that prioritize student agency, sustained inquiry, and real-world connections. If you want, now obviously that's a general one, but you can take that gem and then you can modify it for yourself. So you can put in, you know, the articles that are out there from Rick Wormley, Jack Birkemeyer, Judith Bainan, and Katie Powell, and other mid-level pedagogy experts that have written on this. Go grab all, go grab all the stuff out of MLE's library, right? And then use that to be your specific PBL generator. So you're designing it right there inside mid-level pedagogy and best practice. So I think that's a cool idea. And I might build one of those over eBreak for my building just to say, hey, here's something you could do. This is a possibility. And then, yes, the upcoming webinar, you can, there's a link in the show notes to sign up for the upcoming webinar on games or AI games, interviews, and activities for student learning. And that course is coming up on the 21st at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Ron King posted a picture from the Pacific Northwest. I thought it was pretty cool. So there's your Pacific Northwest good morning photograph. AMLE has an SMS course. A series that helps you explore the foundational research-supported middle grades best practice in a flexible, self-paced virtual format. Get real results with exercises and reflection through the help or reflection throughout to help you embed these principles in your daily practice. And then the Lithuanian Teachers Foreign Language Teachers Association posted a graphic on AI tools for academic researchers. And there's a few in there that I didn't recognize that I'm going to go check out. Julius AI. Got a kid named Julius. I hope that's not his AI. One that I see the kids use all the time, Grammarly. Consensus AI, I've heard of, not played with. Elicit AI. I don't want to be elicited, but this one says it's for research. So, Jenny AI, SciSpace AI. Napkin AI is one I know you've played with and talked about on the show before. So there's a whole bunch here. To pop in and check out. It's a graphic, so if you click the graphic and try to get a link out of the graphic, it won't work. So you have to do some typing yourself to get it.
And it's interesting they have Zotero on there, which I don't know that there's any. I mean, Zotero is a way to organize resources and cite things and that. I didn't know there was AI in that at all.
I've been surprised how many companies that I've used their products for years and never thought of them as an AI company, you know, like WordPress, Corel. What's that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like Corel sent me an ad on my district feed. I use WordPerfect on my Windows machine. I liked WordPerfect. It's still around. but apparently they're going to add in an AI feature. And so, you know, they want me to pay for the upgrade. And I'm like, nah, it's okay. Good. But so many other things are starting to come out and say, so we've got an AI feature and it'll do this for you. And here's an AI feature that'll do that for you inside our app. And it's like, okay. But I think that's something. And that's, so I saw that and I didn't want to mention it, but I think maybe that's what they're doing is they're saying, we're not an AI, but we use AI. Like, for example, ClaudeBot. A lot of people are buying Mac Mini so they can put ClaudeBot on there just to run a local AI. But Claude has come out even said, if you're going to do the free version, fine. Here's an API key to go do that. But from now on, nobody can use an API key if you're one of the paid levels, because it's just, you know, here we are, you know, supporting things we never intended to support. And it's all these extra apps, like, you know, that we're using AI, but, you know, we'll put in the API key and use it. You know, you just have to pay us a little something, something. So I think that's what's going on, but that's a really long answer for just to say, this is what I think is going on.
So I just went to Zotero cause, I do keep it up to date. I don't use it very often anymore, but I do keep it up to date. And I do use it on occasion if I really want to put together something that's that I think is really taking a little more formal research. Because otherwise, I just use hypothesis, which I know nobody else does, but I still like hypothesis. And Zotero, I don't see any, hey, we're using AI on their front page.
Hmm.
There's no, which I'm almost surprised about these days, is that it's not like, hey, we have this AI thing for you. The closest that I think they come with is Zotero instantly creates references and bibliographies for any text editor and directly, but that's done that for ages. So, and so I that's interesting. Okay. Sorry. Little side note there.
According to Google Zotero? Gemini, Zotero does not have a built-in AI. So it must be. Okay. Oh, it's the consensus is using Zotero for their AI. So maybe it's the other way. That's the other direction. Is if you have a Zotero, it integrates with things like Consensus and Jenny and okay. Grammarly. And so that's the connection.
Okay. That makes sense. Do you use Zotero at all?
I have played with it. I have not, I've not done much with it. I do a side project on that Civil War Soldier and,
it would be good for that.
Yeah. I've thrown stuff in there for that, but I've not had a chance to go back and do that because I've been doing this curriculum stuff.
Doing this other thing.
Yeah. Work and yeah. But I'd love to get back to it.
All right. Speaking of A.J. Giuliani, yeah. He also, over at ajgiuliani.com, he has a blog, and April 8th, he posted the reason you study wrong and why the system never told you. And I thought this would be great for kids. I think it's great for teachers to understand. And it's great for kids because what it really talks about is, well, let me quote him someplace, a little bit here. You reread your notes before a test or an important meeting. You highlighted passages in a book and felt the satisfying sense of information going in. You crammed the night before. It's usually a mix of staying up late, running through the material repeatedly until it felt familiar, and walked in the next morning feeling reasonably prepared. All of these strategies feel productive. They produce a belief that psychologists have a specific name for, the feeling of knowing.
Interesting.
It is basically the comfortable sense that the material is in there somewhere and accessible. The research says this feeling is wrong. The strategies that produce the strongest feeling of knowing are frequently the strategies that produce the weakest actual retention. And so he goes on, he gives a background of how we understand memory and learning. A lot of this comes from Hermann Ebbinghaus in 1885. And in the forgetting curve, and then he goes on with the three things that actually work, which is retrieval practice, space practice, and interleaving. And he goes back again to, so why do rereading, massing, and blocking feel more productive than the strategies that actually work? When you reread a passage, its surface features become familiar. The words, the structure, the general shape of the argument flows without resistance, triggering the brain's familiarity detection systems. Familiarity feels like knowing. I think this is a good thing to work through with kids. I've seen tons of research on spaced learning, retrieval practice, and interleaving, and it's all like right there. And then he goes on, and this is the part that this is something that I talked with you this morning about, John. He goes, what does this have to do with AI and why it matters now? And he says, you might be wondering what any of this has to do with learning 3.0. And I was like, learning 3.0? What's learning 3.0? And so I quizzed Sean, because I like to quiz Sean, especially on things that that I don't think he has any chance of actually answering. That's always...
Yes, it's a game we play. Yes.
It's the most fun part. And occasionally he does have the answers, which then both amuses and disappoints me at the same time.
Well, he is going to say, which I find surprising.
But he goes through and he says, learning 1.0 is the oral tradition of learning and passing down through the generations. Learning 2.0 arrived with the written word. So none of these are new things. These are things that like very historical. He claims learning 3.0 aims to bring individual understanding at scale, something not previously available before AI. But he says the strategies that produce durable learning, retrieval practice, spaced repetition, and interleaving are precisely the strategies that AI learning systems are best positioned to deliver at scale. And this is something that I need to process a lot, because the educational tech bros have been pushing for a while that, like, technology will replace the teacher, and a teacher's role will just be to do relationship stuff. And I'm still not convinced on that. And have you heard of, speaking of quizzes, have you heard of Alpha School, the Alpha School model? We talked about it briefly a couple shows ago.
I was going to say, I think we did talk about it, but I haven't had a chance to play with it with all the stuff coming
It's
out.
Alpha School is this whole thing about they do curriculum in 2 hours a day, and then the rest of the day is experiential. Yeah. I'm like, And they have a very high achievement rate. And I'm like, okay, who is making up the student body on this one? Mm-hmm. I am cautious about this. How we learn things and how we remember things, I think the research is pretty solid there, makes sense for me to apply it, to use it, to do it at different times. So I don't know, but I will tell you, this is an interesting article, and I think it's a good read for teachers, and I think it's something that we need to teach kids, because I know I worked with lots of middle school kids, and they're like, I studied Mr. Patterson, really, I did. I was up late last night reading it, and it's like, yeah, we've talked about this. Because that's what studying is for a lot of kids, or has been for a lot of kids. So, slightly lengthy article, but I think it is worth the read. We'll put a link in the show notes there. You might want to clip this one, which would make it clipped.
Yes. Sorry, 1 second. The phys ed teacher just hit my phone, which turned off the podcast. I had to listen to some ringing.
Speaking of distractions.
Yeah. Yeah, I was there. I was like, no, grab stuff. How do I get this back? So Access to Culture Translator has got a couple things this week. So first of all is the slang of the week, which is clipped. And getting clipped has a few definitions, but we're going to discuss the one that has an idea of somebody candidly taking a bad photo of you. With the ubiquity of camera-equipped smartphones, there's always the threat of someone clipping a picture of you or snapping a picture of you mid, like, hamburger bite with a bad posture or asleep in an airport or, you know, that sort of thing. Clipping is often a harmless way to lovingly poke fun of each other, especially in the world of camera-ready veneer. But, of course, it could also be used to bully someone. So just be aware of that. Mm-hmm. And then this I thought was interesting. I'm not a regular pimple. I'm a cool pimple because this actually, I saw this happening this week. So I thought I'd include it. So what it is, well, pimples, a longstanding and famous insecurity for young people, has evolved into a unexpected opportunity for accessorizing. So I don't know if you've seen the kids putting stuff on their face, stars, this sort of thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. Pimple patches that are in the shape of stars. And I think we kind of talked about it a few shows ago. Well, kids are putting stickers on their face. I had a special ed student who had 10 stickers on her face. And I almost wanted to pull her aside and go, why are there 10? Not just one or two, but 10.
Yeah.
And they're putting pimples are on par for, are par for the course for teens. Now, instead of crossing their fingers and hoping nobody would notice their blemishes, people are decorating them. And brands like Starface, Hero Cosmetics, they rose to popularity during that the pandemic. But when in-person rhythms resumed, the patches remained, perhaps because it's easiest, you know, to resist picking your skin when you have a little sticker to. And it's a cute little sticker to cover it. And it's not just teens, adults in the airport, grocery store, or even at work are all rocking them. So while the trend has its haters, it has influencers cashing in, including Hailey Bieber. Her brand is, she has a brand for hydrocolloid patches. Debuting them next week with some fun shapes like mushrooms, jelly beans, and bubbles. And they retail only for $16. So I expect to see some mushrooms and jelly beans and bubbles on my student's face here in the course of the next few weeks.
Yep.
Z.AI. I don't know if you've played with these people or not.
I have not.
Z.AI. Apparently we have so many AIs that the people using letters for company names are down to Z. That means double AI is coming probably next or has already happened. Yep. I don't know. But I thought this was interesting because this is an open source LLM. And so this is, we're appealing to the nerd crowd in the mm-hmm. podcast at the moment. Have you ever looked at Claudebot and thought, oh, you know, I really want my own AI. I'll just go buy a Mac Mini and I'll put my own AI in and do, you know, do my own thing. Well, there's now an open source LLM that is right up there with Claude and ChatGPT and Gemini. Matter of fact, it's ranking either second, third, or fourth when run against those LLMs. And for being an open source LLM, well, that's pretty good. So it's a next generation flagship model for agentic engineering with significantly stronger coding capabilities than its predecessor. It achieves a state-of-the-art performance with on the SWE Bench Pro and leads GLM 5 by a wide margin on a bunch of other tech benches that I'll just leave off the script at the moment. The thing is that it's trainable. Mm-hmm. And so you can train it on your stuff. So you could train it on your curriculum and you could put it on a little computer in the room, or you just use it yourself. Right. And it's trained on your stuff.
Yeah.
And you can put in more things than you would in a folder for, you know, Gemini or GPT or Claude and like make it a super trained LLM on just on your stuff. I suppose if you had a series of Max, you could actually take, I know that Dexter Public Schools in Michigan bought 3 Mac studios and put something like this on there. And now they have their own district LLM and it doesn't go outside the district. It stays only in the district. And if a kid does something, it reports it right to them and they can go to the kid and say, so tell us why you're typing this into the AI and what are you trying to get out of it? So you know, if you're looking for something for you, I'm not saying necessarily for the kids, this might be, it's free. It's open source. It doesn't cost anything. Mm-hmm. I put a link to the webpage for the Z.AI GLM 5.1. And then there's you can go over and get it at Hugging Face among other places, but I put a link into the Hugging Face, website for you in case you want to go grab it and you want to play with it yourself.
Yeah, Hugging Face has a lot of resources available, so definitely worth checking out. You might want to check out Charcuterie as well.
Ooh, sounds delicious. What is it?
I know. It is not cheesy at all. Charcuterie is... a way to a visual explorer for Unicode. So Unicode is how computers and phones display text and emojis as well. So, and this is a visual explorer, which means you can kind of click on it and see all the variants of different letters or different characters. So if you want to look at all the variants of an S, for example, you can click on it and you will see like a, kind of a basic S in the middle, and then you'll see all the other S's all around it. It's something that is pretty cool and very tactile. It was almost tactile as well, because it makes this neat little sound. It's got like what looks like a little tray. As you search for things, it'll put them along the bottom. By the way, So you can click and go kind of back to them. Anything that you've clicked on, so. Let's do, you know, that. And it's just neat. It's like, well, what did this do? Not sure what I would actually do with it, but it's really neat. It also has the emoji and the pictographs. So it's got symbols. It's got dingbats. There's 1,516 emoji and pictographs. There's 225 dingbats. There's 272 math characters. There's phonetics. There's combining marks. There's Armenian. There is punctuation. And again, it's just something that's neat to kind of explore and see what's there. All right, another place to see what's there is over at middleschoolmatters.com, where we have links to everything that we've talked about. Occasionally we have extra stuff that we didn't get around to talking about this week, and it is all there as well. We would also love it if you would head over to the podcast catcher of your choice. And give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest co-show host. And of course, tell your friends, your teaching mates, the people down the hall, maybe even the people up the stairs or down the stairs or even in a different building, or if you go to a conference, say, hey, you've checked out Middle School Matters. We would greatly appreciate it. With that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care. All opinions expressed on this podcast are exclusively the opinions of the host and guest and not indicative of any employer.